You are listening to Issues and Ideas here on KCBX Central Coast Public Radio. I'm Randall White. Correspondent Nina Totenberg is a well-known name for NPR listeners as she covers legal affairs, and early summer is her moment to shine, helping many of us understand the often complicated issues surrounding decisions handed down by the U.S. Supreme Court. We're honored to have Nina Totenberg join us today from the NPR studios in Washington, D.C. Welcome to Issues and Ideas.
And I'm honored to be with you.
So how do you see the legal issues playing out surrounding the court's decision last month on marriage rights for same-sex couples?
Well, you know, it's very difficult to predict these things. But I do think when I was doing my court wrap-up, I talked to Akhil Amar, who's a professor at Yale Law School, and he made a point that others have since reinforced, which is that while there is a distinct part of the country, mainly in the South and some parts of the West, that are, shall we say, opposed to or at least hesitant about the Supreme Court's decision or not particularly in favor of the Supreme Court's decision on same-sex marriage, the fact is that the country has moved along, even in those areas, way more quickly than anyone might reasonably have anticipated. Public opinion has changed so dramatically from a decade or so ago when something like 27% of the people who were polled said they favored same-sex marriage to now not just over 50%, but significantly over 50%. In most areas of the country, it's way over 50%. And it crosses all demographic groups to a limited extent. What's interesting is when you look at people who say they've changed their views on same-sex marriage, older people, they haven't gone back to the way they used to be. So there's that, and there's the fact that if you compare the issue of same-sex marriage to the issue of school desegregation in the 1950s, the Supreme Court was really leading the way in school desegregation in the South. And that is much less the case today in terms of same-sex marriage. The country has changed, as I said, dramatically. And as Professor Amar said to me, the court is to some extent just riding the wave. And so I expect that we're going to have some ugly stuff about will people issue marriage licenses in some places, but that will be ironed out in relatively short order, and that the more difficult question will be whether businesses, usually small businesses, have to cater to and provide services to same-sex couples in the same manner that they provide them to opposite-sex couples. There's no question about how that would be resolved if there were a public accommodations law, for example, similar to the federal law requiring that public accommodations be provided on an equal basis to all people of the same race, religion, etc. But in most states, such a law doesn't exist. In the states where it does exist, it's not a problem. And you're going to see a big drive now from gay rights groups trying to get those laws passed in some states with the ultimate goal of getting a federal law passed.
During Morning Edition on Monday, you had a piece that really breaks down the most recent U.S. Supreme Court term, saying the liberals were victorious in the majority of cases and the conservatives were splintered and in disarray. Is the court more divided than you've ever seen it?
Well, I think there is a tendency, more of a tendency, to write separate opinions, usually by the conservatives in the last few years, at least more so than I recall. You always have to say that, you know, I haven't gone back and done a statistical analysis of what it was like in the late 60s and in the 70s and in the 80s. But my overall impression is that you look at a dissenting opinion or even a majority opinion and you'll see one or two or three concurring opinions, often The conservative justices will say, I concur in the judgment, which means I concur in the outcome, but not in how you got there and what the legal reasoning is. Now, that may be the product, this term especially, of the mix of cases. That certainly is the reason I think the liberals prevailed in many of the big cases, is the mix of cases and the issues that were before the court. And next term, the mix is, looks to be very different, with conservatives, with the issues in before the court much more in the heartland of issues that are important to conservatives and where they're likely to have five votes to prevail.
Included in that is affirmative action in higher education, right? And I think for the first time in decades, a case dealing with the general availability of abortion.
Well, they haven't granted an abortion case yet, but we expect that they will, because these cases have come up to the court, and now there is in front of the court from the Fifth Circuit a test of quite draconian limits on abortion in Texas, and it seems that it's, and similar efforts in other states have been invalidated by other courts in other regions of the country, and it would seem that it's time for the court to resolve that issue. There's a very important case that could drive a dagger into the heart of labor unions in the public sector. It comes from California, and there are cases involving one person, one vote that could redo the way redistricting is done, because the people who brought these cases contend that by one person, one vote, we mean not people eligible to vote, that it should be, let me put it this way, for years in general, when we look at redistricting, we're looking at the number of people in a state and how to carve up districts. And the challengers here claim that it's, we should not be looking at the number of people in a state, but we should be looking at those eligible to vote.
Where are we in terms of retirement? Do you think President Obama will have an opportunity to appoint a justice before his second term is finished?
Unless somebody gets very sick, I would doubt it, because it would be very difficult to confirm somebody with a Republican Senate and a Democratic president and a tendency by both parties, but Republicans even more than Democrats, to not vote to confirm a president's nomination to the Supreme Court for ideological reasons, or not even ideological reasons, just in some ways because the nominee is the nominee of that president's party. And so I think with less than a year and a half or so to go in President Obama's presidency, unless we get somebody who's quite ill and can't serve, or who dies, the likelihood is it will be the next president who has the opportunities. And the next president could have as many as four or five vacancies to fill, because if that's how many people are over 70.
Wow, that would really be an altering of the makeup of the court.
It certainly would.
Well, I can tell you, Nina, that we use you on a regular basis, or we reference you on a regular basis during our pledge drive times, because we've heard from our listeners and how much they appreciate your insight on the court and legal affairs.
You're so nice. And of course, your listeners. I'll do this for you. I used to do this all the time for our Boston station where my parents lived. And that is, if you listen and you can afford to give something and you don't contribute, remember, one day you could turn on the radio and it will be, all you'll hear is, but more importantly, if you give just something, you will feel so much better, because as my mother used to say, you won't be a freeloader.
Correspondent Nina Totenberg, NPR Legal Affairs, thank you so much for joining us from the NPR studios in Washington, D.C., and being with us today on Issues and Ideas.
It's really been great. Thanks so much.
And I'm Randall White, KCBX News.